Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. We are in studio today with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones to talk about the principles and management and leadership styles of the Omega leader, Jesus Christ himself. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Glad you are here. We are solo on this show this week. I hope that is a okay thing with you.
I love it.
Well, this week we are talking about something that is very close to all of our hearts and lives, which is relatives. And what is close to somebody's hearts is winemaking, right?
Right.
You write about these two chapters in Jesus Entrepreneur. Everyone has a relative, and a leader is not hiding from the winemaker. So I am curious and excited as we step off of this platform today to talk more about the Omega leadership principles. So welcome to the show. Glad to have you. So, Lori, these two chapters, speak to us about this relative. Everybody has a relative. What were Jesus's relatives like?
Well, we know about his mother. We don't know much about his brothers or sisters. But what was interesting to me in my tour of the Holy Land, which I was privileged to go on several years ago, was that when you saw Peter's house and you looked at the village, you know, he recruited, a lot of those people were related to each other. Certainly James and John were brothers. And it was a kind of a concentric circle of influence that kept widening and widening. And I talk in the book about one of the greatest car salesmen that have ever lived, and he knew that everyone had a relative. So even if that person didn't buy a car from him, he knew that they had relatives. And so someone asked him how he did so well, and he said, when someone comes in the door, I see the number 250 around them, circling them. And they said, 250, what does that mean? And he said, well, the average person knows 250 people. So that person represents a kingdom or a queendom of 250 people. How can I influence them in a positive way, even if it's not a sale? How can they have such a good experience of me that when they leave, they talk about it to their friends and family? Certainly Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg realized that everyone has a relative,
right,
or a friend. So social media, Jesus was an early adapter to social media.
Interesting. You start early in this chapter by talking about how Jesus understood that everyone has a relative, and you tell the story about you and your one of your best friends, Linda, finding the snake and proudly bringing it to her mother.
Oh yeah.
To show her the accomplishment.
Oh yes.
But you go on to talk how Jesus understood that everyone has a relative because he called us brothers and sisters. He understood that when he called the winds and seas to obey him and noticed with great sadness a sparrow that had fallen to the ground, he told the hard-hearted Pharisee that if you don't praise me, the very rocks and trees shall do so. All of creation is indeed related to God. Powerful, powerful imagery there on what it means to be what you started this chapter with, Matthew 25. Whatever you have done to the least of these, my brethren, you have done unto me.
Mm.
Talk to us a little bit about this familial side of Jesus. Why did he call us brothers and sisters?
Well, I believe that he really was a family man.
Hmm.
In fact, we've got a book coming
out called Jesus'
Family Man. And as I contemplated it, you know, we tend to think of Jesus as being single and celibate and hanging out with a group of guys, wandering around doing good things. But as I thought more deeply about it, it occurred to me that he really was all about family. He constantly went to spend time with his father. He constantly talked about doing his father's will. He with his dying breath, made sure that his mother was cared for. He called us brothers and sisters. He told the story of the prodigal son. He really came to bring the family home. His prayer was that they may be one, even as you and I are one. That's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus was very relationship-oriented. And for him to say so profoundly that whatever you've done to the least of these, you've done it unto me, I mean, it was just blasphemous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also scandalous to think about, because we think of God, you know, maybe the thunderbolt, Zeus-like figure in the clouds. And then here comes Jesus saying, if you've hurt a child or if you've hurt somebody, you've done it to me.
Right.
So he was declaring himself this open, beating heart that was related and could feel everybody's pain. And so heaven forbid that we should knowingly inflict pain, because what he's saying there is, you're hurting me.
Mm.
When you're hurting them, you're hurting me. And if people really got that, oh my goodness, I mean, if you really thought that you were spitting on the face of God, or the way that we're cursing, you know, this whole thing about cursing now in book titles and TV series, and you know, that's one of the Ten Commandments, not to use the Lord's name in vain, and we're seeming to do it. I was just reading three out of the top eight movies are raunch fests. You know, when we profane one another, we're profaning God, and it's serious.
Wow, that's deep.
But let me tell the story of the snake.
Okay, tell us the story.
In fact, I'm on my way to see Linda in Alaska.
Yes.
Tomorrow I leave. So her daddy had a horse ranch. Her mom and dad had a horse ranch in Arizona, and they were living my dream, having a horse ranch. So I went out to see them, and we went out into the barn, Linda and I, who've known each other since we were 16 years
mm-hmm.
old. We went out to the barn, and there was a new baby that had been born, and we looked over, and there was a snake.
Nice.
And, oh, my goodness. So Linda, who's fearless, you know, she shoots rifles and flies planes and does all this other stuff that her daddy does and her husband does with her. So she came running into her mom, and she said, look, Mom, this is the snake that we found. You know, the horse has killed it. And her mother began to weep, and she said, oh, Betsy. Linda said, you named the snake? And she said, yeah, that was a king snake that was in the barn to get the rats. And so her mother was grieving the snake, which is the most natural enemy to horses, and certainly a lot of women don't care for snakes, and yet she mourned the loss of this creature. But I've never quite gotten fond of snakes. And it just touched me that her mother had goats, chickens, snakes, birds, pigeons, I mean, you name it. Her mother was like Mother Earth and celebrated the life
right.
in everything.
Right.
And those are good people to be around.
Yeah. So in this chapter, you begin to talk about this relatedness and its relevance to being a spiritualpreneur and bringing it into how these principles of everybody is related to each other, right?
Right.
And you talk about a story that, share a story that when you were speaking at some conference, a man came up and said his name was Joe Jones as well. And you all started talking about how, well, you're probably related at some level. But in this chapter, one of the points that you're trying to make about this principle of relative and relatives is how it relates to the relationship of how we do business and how we interact with people. Right,
right.
So talk to us a little bit about that. What's that significance between when you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me. On the other side of that coin, I've got to watch the stock market numbers, right?
Right.
So my eye is somewhere else. How does the Omega Leader handle and manage that principle?
Well, carefully and consciously. And I told the story yesterday in the PATH community call. which I just heard on Monday in a meeting, that this young resident had been trying to get into residency, or a young doctor in training, and he'd been turned down 4 times because he had gone to school in a foreign country. And so, you know, they kept passing him over. And finally, this one woman doctor who was, I guess, in charge of the committee, she had observed that he was constantly volunteering and he was mentoring some of the students in the neighborhood. And so she kept her eye on him. And finally she said, you know, I'm not going to let this kid, we're not going to pass him by this time. He's very persistent. And I like his persistence. So she got him in. He was in really by her good graces and the skin of his teeth, because he wasn't a stellar student. But she said he just never gives up.
Wow.
So about 6 months into it, he was in the ER, and they brought in a drug overdose of a young man, and he had been on the street. And he refused to give up. He kept doing CPR on him, and they kept saying, call time of death, and he wouldn't. And he did this for an inordinate amount of time.
Kept trying to resuscitate
his
life.
And finally the kid came back to life.
Mm.
And it turns out that this boy was the wayward brother of this woman doctor who had gotten him into the residency.
Wow.
And so he literally brought back to life her brother, the brother of the woman who gave him the grace to get into medical school. And he testified to her, and he said it was the Holy Spirit that made all this happen. Because imagine if someone else had been in there, they might have given up. But she saw that quality in him, and it ended up saving the life of her brother.
Mm-hmm. That puts relative all in a different perspective.
And who would think that a highly accomplished physician would have a brother on the street doing drugs? But, you know, we see that in families all the time.
Right. You have some great questions always in these chapters and insights, and you talk about, as a spiritpreneur, I will do well to understand and believe that everything is relative. You can't hurt one thing without hurting someone else invisible behind it. Powerful image right there.
Right.
So spiritpreneurs, this term that you've coined, you know, inside this book, is we're learning is a little bit different than an entrepreneur.
Right.
Talk to us about that for a second.
Well, a spiritpreneur is someone who can say yes to these three questions. Is the work I'm doing honoring God? Is the work I'm doing honoring me, my gifts and my talents? And then thirdly, am I making a living full-time doing all of the above?
Hmm.
So you could be an entrepreneur, but if your work, you know, drug dealers are entrepreneurs.
Sure.
But if your work isn't honoring God, then you're not a spiritpreneur. You could be, let's say, a pastor. But if your true calling is to be something else, and you're out of your giftedness, you became a pastor because your parents were pastors or your father or someone wanted that, and it wasn't your calling, then you're not honoring God because you were gifted in another area.
Mm.
And then certainly the notion that we can make a living full-time doing what we love, it's never been as possible as it is now.
Yeah.
With the technology and the great gifts and freedoms of this country and capitalism. You know, it's never been, it used to be Paul was a tent maker so he could preach.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can be like Tom Shoes, sell shoes and do good at the same time.
Right.
So that's what's exciting about this time that we're in.
You know, one of the things that that kind of struck me as I read this, and I think about the images here between Jesus understanding that everybody has a relative, I wonder if that model, those principles of when you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me, is how we're supposed to see each person. So, you know, the model of the Omega leader, the spiritpreneur, is to see people as your brother and your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And if we did that, Would there be poverty? Would there be homelessness? Would there be this space of, you talk about, maybe it's in the next, no, it's in this section. What must we do to end this illusion that we can be better than someone else, more holy, more pure, that our failings are all in the family while theirs expose and doom them to hell?
Mm.
You know, so, wow, just a powerful, powerful chapter on, wow, is everything relative?
I believe it is. I believe it is. I was reading at the hairdressers this morning, a magazine on domestic violence. Glamour magazine did a piece on domestic violence, and it's killing one out of every four. They're talking about the disease that's affecting one out of four women, and it's abuse. And Joe Biden sponsored in 1996 a bill to end domestic violence, and he started a whole program about that. And I was interested to read that he said he got pushback from some conservative Christian organizations that said he shouldn't be dealing with that because it's a family matter.
Mm.
And that's deadly, to think that our sins are all in the family, that we can just talk about it within the family. And so the motto that the Glamour magazine and other people are saying, here's the thing, tell somebody. If you're getting hit, tell somebody. Mm-hmm. If you know somebody who's getting hit, tell somebody. And not just hit physically, but verbally, with verbal abuse.
Right.
So that concept of all in the family, you know, an incest is goes on more than we recognize. You know, the Catholic Church with the priests burying their problems, not wanting to air them in public.
Mm-hmm.
We see it in banks and all sorts of people. They think they can keep the secrets. You know, they think there's a saying in 12-step programs, you're only as sick as your secrets.
Mm.
So keeping things in the family can be a deadly formula when it needs to be brought to light.
Wow. Lots to think about in that chapter. Very, very deep thoughts. So let's turn our attention to this next principle of understanding. He didn't try to hide from the winemaker. I love this chapter as it talks about, it's very personal inside when you read it. What am I afraid of? What am I hiding? What lid am I hiding under? What bush? What, you know, place, whatever. So talk to us a little bit about your thoughts as you were writing this chapter and principle.
Well, the story is from Gideon. It's one of my favorite stories,
mm-hmm.
because the people were under siege, and Gideon wisely decided to do some work in the wine vat. suddenly, that's where it needed to be. His chore suddenly took him out of sight from conflict, and God finds him, and this angel appears and says, "Hail, you mighty man of valor," which is just a cosmic joke. I mean, because if anything, he's hiding like a coward.
Exactly. Totally.
But the angel, you know, God always seeing the best in us. The angel says, "You know, get up there and fight. I mean, you were meant to fight."
Mm.
And Gideon is famous for laying the fleece, not quite sure that he's ready, and so he sets up all these signs and wonders that God has to perform. But that notion that you can't hide from God, even in the wine vat, that God will find you.
Yes. And I noted here in this, as you wrote this, really what he wanted was the damp, dark, sweet-smelling recesses of a place where the world would pass him by.
Mm.
You know? And the question that came to my mind is, where are we the most comfortable? You know, what is that damp, dark, sweet-smelling recess of a place where the world just passes us by?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just on idle. We're in neutral. We're, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, your vacation or your R&R or, you know, but like in this story, you know, God was calling Gideon for a specific reason.
Right. Well, One of my favorite sayings is, everything you ever wanted lies three steps beyond your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And we do tend to try to get comfortable. One of the saddest stories in Scripture is the Israelites that settled just outside of the Promised Land. They said, this is good enough. It's far enough. We've gone far enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, no, you're so close. You're so close. And we love to watch people risk. But do we do it ourselves? Are we just going to be spectators in the game of life?
Mm.
And I think it's a very spiritual question. I'm going to be talking about this tonight on the Trinity Broadcasting Network in my interview with Paul Crouch Jr.
Yes.
Risking and roaring that God calls us to not just huddle and ask, seek God in prayer, and you know, really when that's just disguised cowardice, but... And I was thinking there's a phrase in the Song of Deborah where she said, why were you waiting? Were you waiting for the sheep's whistle? When she was standing there as a judge saying, get up, you know, we're being attacked, get up. But they were waiting for the sheep's whistle. And so as I think about that, I'm sure a lot of that's cultural and we can't even, you know, really relate to what was going on. But the imagery that is clear is that they were waiting for a different sign rather than what was right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
She was standing there in front of them saying, this needs to happen. But they decided it wasn't a sheep's whistle, so they weren't going to recognize it.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was interesting in this chapter, you don't really get into Gideon's whole fleece activity. But you allude to it, you know, you direct the reader to read in Judges, you know, chapter 6, beginning with verse 1, and the whole story kind of unfolds all through that whole chapter. It's interesting to me that two or three times, right, he puts the fleece out, like the first time he's confronted with the angel and burns the bread and the meat right on the altar, and Gideon's convinced, okay, this is the angel, but just to be sure, I'm gonna put some fleece
one more time.
And it was two more times,
right?
Or was it two or three?
I don't know,
more
I
times
think three.
You know, so what is that message to us today in using this passage of Gideon? What, you know, we're in the barrel, we've got the lid on it. The angel opens our lid and says, what up? You know?
What up, get up.
And yet, we still are not convinced that God is doing the winemaking in us.
Hmm. Right. It's very true. And I remember when the charismatic revolution was going through the United States, and I was certainly immersed in that. Fleece laying was something they'd say, well, lay a fleece. If you're not sure, just lay a fleece.
Yeah.
Well, it just got to be ridiculous.
Right.
You know, couldn't common sense be a fleece? Couldn't someone asking for something be a fleece? I mean, Jesus, I think he jumped over a lot of that, like when they were trying to debate whether if an ox falls into a ditch on the Sabbath, you know, going back to the law, blah, 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 and he says, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Help it out. So Jesus is very practical, very pragmatic. And this laying of a fleece, I think Gideon maybe was an earth, could be an earth, had to be convinced, you know, Doubting Thomas, we call him Doubting Thomas.
Right.
He had to be convinced. If the gospel and the scripture shows us anything, it's that God is very patient with us.
Mm.
Very patient. And yet, what did Gideon miss? I mean, he went out and he won battle after battle after battle and became a mighty man of valor. But then he got so caught up in the joy of the victory that when the people said, oh, let's put a face on the coin, he said, okay, put God on one side and put my face on the other. And, oh, that was a mistake. Boom, down he went, you know.
Exactly. One of the things that you talk about, one of the places that we hide is in our past.
Mm.
As long as we're looking in the rearview mirror, we might miss the angel standing there, holding out a big welcome home sign.
Mm.
right?
So true.
Yeah, so very true. So in this chapter, Lori, are you saying that a spiritpreneur is never going to hide out with the lid on?
Oh, I think we do it all the time. I think that the challenge to us, and I include myself in that group, is when God is calling us to do something, step out and do it. And know that it's through God's power, not our own power. Whenever we look at our own power, we're going to fail.
Sure.
But through Christ, I can do all things who strengthens me. And that's what we need to look at. And I was having a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a woman who had been sexually abused, severely sexually abused as a child. And she actually has a tattoo of forgiveness on her ankle. And I said, when did you learn to forgive? And she said, I learned to forgive when I gave up the hope that the past could have been any different.
Mm.
And I'm still pondering that.
Mm.
You know, so when we're stuck in the past saying, oh, this shouldn't have happened, or you shouldn't have done this to me, or we're stuck. We can't move on.
Right.
The past is the past for a reason. So let's pick up and move on.
Right. Because otherwise we're missing the angel that's standing there with the welcome
right.
home sign.
Right.
Very, very powerful thoughts. And, wow. I got to think about that. Great images. You end this chapter here, this he knew that... Or he didn't try to hide from the winemaker, the Omega leader, Jesus, the spiritpreneur, the piece in us that is longing, something's pulling us, something is grabbing at our heartstrings and telling us to do this, you know, to do that, to go there, to start this company, to merge with that group, to, you know, whatever. And what you're saying in this chapter is not to be afraid
right.
of that, not to be afraid of your calling as a spiritpreneur, but step into that calling, knowing that there are going to be times that you will be, but don't stay there.
Right. And as we're thinking about this, I'm thinking about my Holy Land excursion again, and that the Garden of Gethsemane was an olive garden.
Mm.
And the olives were pressed, you know, olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he was pressed. His soul was pressed. Are you willing to go through with this? And then he went into the prison, the dungeon, before his crucifixion,
right.
like a cold, damp place. But what intrigued me was when we looked at the place where they think Jesus's tomb was. They don't know with historical accuracy, but geographically they figured it out. It had to be in this area pretty much. And it was actually a vineyard, a cave in a vineyard. And so he went from being pressed into olive oil to the damp place, and yet he emerged from a vineyard.
Yes. Yeah, you talk about that at the end of this chapter. Very, very powerful. Even in his death, Jesus did not hide from the winemaker. Very, very well said. And where are you hiding out from God? What is it that you're afraid of? What is the booming voice saying you must do? And I believe, Lori, this whole effort of Omega leader and spiritpreneur is a magnificent tool and principles and concepts that you have helped us to get our minds and our hands around, that helps us understand our calling, that voice inside of us saying, you know, come higher. So great insights in these two chapters. Thank you so much. Any last thoughts that you want to share with us? We know that you're going to be on the Trinity Broadcasting Network TV show tonight with Paul Crouch Jr. It will air live from 7 to 9. Sorry about that. So we invite you on your cable network, wherever you are viewing from, to log in and watch Lori Beth on TV.
So go forth and be a valiant warrior. It's a lot more fun than hiding out in a wine vat.
Nice. Very well said. Thank you all so much. We will see you probably not next week, but the following week. And we wish you a great 4th of July.
Thank you, Shelley.